Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Detroit, Michigan, and earned a B.S. in psychology and an M.E.D. in special education and teaching from Wayne State University. From 1972 to 1988, she struggled with heroin addiction, and since 2014, she's been the founder and president of Sanctum House, which offers a full array of support programs to victims of human trafficking, utilizing a combination of mental health, physical support, education, training, and spiritual programs. Her name? Edie Franklin. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Crisula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Edie Franklin, the founder and president of Sanctum House. Edie, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Oh, it's an honor to be here. Thank you for inviting me. Can we start
by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Oh, okay, great. I'm born and raised in Detroit, went to Bagley Elementary School, lived between Curtis and Thatcher, and went through Bagley until the sixth grade, and then we moved to Huntington Woods, and I lived there until I'm grown, and now I move back there, as everybody does.
What were you like as a young girl?
Oh, I was so cute. I was very flamboyant. You know, my parents were bigger than life, kind of, and so I took after them. And we did a fair amount of traveling when I was a young girl. We went away in the summertime to Florida and lived, and we lived in Florida during the winter, the month of February, so I was a decent student. We used to take our homework with us and do it in Florida. And I kind of always saw myself as a little bit of an outsider, even though I had friends. I always felt a little bit on the outside of the in crowd. But I looked up to my brother. I had a wonderful brother, so I always kind of followed. He kind of followed the narrow path, the straight path, and I came up and they'd say, "Oh, you're Gary's sister," you know, because I was the talker in school. But I had a decent childhood, a very nice childhood.
You're 18 years old, you're at Wayne State, and one day something happened that changed your life.
Yeah, actually, I was a little past 19. I was 19 years old. I had been married for a couple of years, and we were hippies back then. We were kind of, you know, in the community, and I thought that I would try marijuana. And so I was in an abnormal psychology class, and I found a young man there was one seat left in the class, actually, oddly enough. And so I sat there, and he looked like he could get me some marijuana. I thought it would spruce up my marriage. I got married when I was 19, and I thought this would be a fun thing to do. So I followed him out of the classroom and asked him if he could get me some marijuana. And as it happened, he was, in fact, a drug dealer. And so I followed him. And beyond marijuana, ultimately, he was also a heroin dealer. And so I started using heroin with him.
And in 1973, you got arrested.
Yes, I did. And I got arrested the first time in 73. And I was put on probation. At that time, I had been a school teacher. So it was really kind of embarrassing for my family and for us. It was on the, you know, Edith Franklin school teacher, you know, gets arrested for drug sales or whatever. I think we sold to an undercover cop or something. And then I was, instead of going to jail, I was on 5 years probation back then. And that kind of changed my life also. But that was the first time I got arrested.
You got arrested again in 79.
Yes, I did, actually. I got arrested in 1979, and it was for possession. I remember I had just made a delivery because I had started dealing drugs a lot, and they were following me around, and they picked me up on the street. I knew for myself at that time I was really seriously addicted to drugs. And I knew that the only way for me to get out was to get caught, really and truly. And so I got picked up on the street The police followed me into a gas station. I got out of the car. You know, they had guns on me from all sides. And I thought, oh, my God, what am I doing here? Took me to jail. And then I went home. That was in Wayne County. But then I went home the next day, and I got arrested again back-to-back in Oakland County, where I lived. So I caught a case in Detroit, and then I caught a case in Oakland County, where ultimately I was facing for the possession and everything I had, because they ransacked my house, and I was facing 20 years in prison.
What, Edie, what did your parents say and do through those years?
Well, I mean, you know, I was a good student in school. You know, I'd gotten my master's degree in education, and I had taught, and I was always a girl that worked. I started working at a very young age. So I was very responsible, and even through my my dealing days, I was working, and I was supporting myself and working through those years. They were very worried about me, but there was, because I was, you know, I was really confident. I've always been pretty confident in myself. No matter what they could say, I wasn't going to stop. And so they were trying to help me and get me into therapy. I can't begin to tell you how many therapists I went to and how many programs I'd been in and out of as far as drug treatment facilities. So they were always trying to help me, and they were the wind beneath my wings to try and get me some help, my family, but there was nothing that they could do at that time. The only thing that was going to stop me was the police.
And then you went to Odyssey House for a year and a half.
Yeah, so instead of going to prison for the 20 years, my parents always supported me, so we had attorneys, and they decided that I wasn't really a criminal, even though I was involved in criminal activities, that I really needed help and treatment. So I went away to Odyssey House for a year and a half, partly here in Detroit, down on Brush and Grand Boulevard, actually, right over here on the corner. So I was down here for about a year, whatever, and then I got transferred to their New York program. So I went to Manhattan and lived there for a little bit and went through their program. I was there for over a year and a half.
We're talking Edie Franklin. When we come back, we're going to ask her about the day she got clean. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula, and we're with Edie Franklin. From 1972 to 1988, she struggled with addiction. Edie, talk about the day you got clean.
Okay, the day I got clean. That's so bizarre. I was at home, and I was drinking. I had already quit using heroin in 83, and this was in 1988. And my friend and I were going to go to a bar in Canada and have a good time, and I was drunk already, and he said to me, don't go out of the house, Edie. You're drinking. You need to stay in the house. And it was raining, and I said, oh, all right, George, right, and proceeded to hang up the phone, put on my coat, get in my car. And I was driving down Orchard Lake Road in Northwestern, and I made a left turn because I was trying to get into Canada, what I thought, and instead I drove through the gas station window that was on 14 Mile on Orchard Lake Road. And the glass was coming down, and the police came to arrest me. And I thought, and I was already on probation from the case that I had caught, you know, in 79, I guess it was in 80, because I was ended up on lifetime probation. So I was, you know, I was on probation ultimately for 26 years. And they took me to jail, and I was really nervous because I thought I had violated probation. But I called my brother, who was an addiction therapist. He's a psychiatrist in California. He said, just get yourself situated and go into Maple Grove and get yourself clean. So from that night, I went to jail, and then I went and asked to go into Maple Grove. So I went through their intensive outpatient program, and that's where I actually got clean. I knew that I needed to do something different because my life was really a wreck. Even though I was working and doing the things that I was supposed to do, I was a real alcoholic. I mean, I got up in the morning with a tumbler. I went to bed with a tumbler. I mean, I just spent my days drinking. So it made a real difference to me to get clean.
Talk to us, Edie, about the miracle we know as AA in its 12 steps.
Yeah. So I went, actually, I came. What I did is I said to my brother, what should I do? And he said, you know, start going to Maple Grove, but start going to AA and get a paper trail so that they know that you're trying to do something. I think he just wanted me to get plugged in to something that he knew would help. And so I started going to AA. It was January 19th, 1988 was my very first meeting. And God, it really saved my life. I mean, I plugged in and I made friends and I did what I was supposed to do. And I've been, you know, clean and going to program ever since.
32 years.
Yes, 32 years it was just past.
So 32 years ago, Edie, that door closed. That dark 26-year period of your life, chapter of your life, it's been closed for 32 years, yet you're still willing to talk about it. Why?
Well, I guess I'm willing to talk about it because I had, you know, in 2013, every year since then, I always do some kind of self-help program to make myself a better person, engage in the community, help other people. So I had sponsored women and all that kind of stuff. And I was taking a self-help program. It was Landmark Education, the forum, and I did their self-expression leadership training program. And out of it, you had to find something missing in the community and plug the hole, make the gap. So I had been hearing a lot about human trafficking, which is extremely prevalent now. It was always prevalent, but now people are talking about it. And I saw that people were talking about it, but as I researched it, I didn't see that there was anything really being done for the women that were found, rescued, and needed help. There were three-day programs. There were 30-day programs, not many, a bed, but no real treatment. So I decided to open up a safe house for adult women survivors of human trafficking. And I'd always been for the underdog because I was a throwaway woman and I knew that there was hope for people. And so I went about trying to open up a safe house. And I felt because of my history, because there wasn't a moment in time that I couldn't have been trafficked and that I didn't do behaviors that were not, you know, forthright always, I felt that my history could help them and they could relate to me and I could relate to them. And so I'm willing to talk about it if it will help anybody else know that there is hope. And like your show says, and like I always say, the possibilities are endless. I'm a possibility for them.
And in 2014... you founded and became the president of Sanctum House. If you want to learn more, www.sanctumhouse.org. Edie, tell us about Sanctum House.
Well, Sanctum House is like my little baby, you know. We started 8 years ago, and I had the notion that we had to start a long-term treatment program because I had been through one, and I knew that long-term treatment is what people need. You can't get better from trauma, you know, overnight. And because we found that, you know, most of the women or people in general, because it's not just women, it's men, it's boys, it's LGBTQ, it's any vulnerable population that gets caught up in trafficking. And I knew that between the trauma and the drug addiction, you know, we had to have a long-term treatment program. So I started talking about it, and I got a following, and then we got a 501c3. I applied in 2015 for our 501c3. And then we were lucky enough to get a grant from the government for 3 years to help us catapult this into existence. And it's a 2-year long-term treatment program. We started with adult women. Ultimately, we want to do women, children, LGBTQ, boys, all of that. But right now, it's a 2-year program for adult women survivors of human trafficking. And we help them with physical, psychological, educational, spiritual, emotional issues that help make them a well-rounded human being.
So these women, for 2 years, what do these residents do all day?
They do a lot, okay? We stay pretty darn busy. So we have meeting in the morning when we get up, and some of them right now, we have three that are in college, taking college classes. We have three that are getting their GED. We have women that are out in the workforce now that are actually working because we promised them a sustainable lifestyle so that they can sustain themselves when they leave us. But they get, first they come in and they get a physical, and we get them a physical, a psychiatric evaluation. We get them to a dentist, an eye doctor, a gynecologist, all the things that when you're in the street, you don't really pay attention to. Either you're too drugged and you don't feel it, because 98% of people in trafficking are addicted, pretty much. It's the way that you can endure it, and or it's the way that a trafficker keeps you under their control by keeping you addicted. And so we deal with that. They have healthy relationships classes. They have, entrepreneurship classes. They have a survivor group. They have therapy and trauma therapy three times a week. We have a medical director and the nurse comes in twice a week. They do jujitsu and self-defense training. They go for hikes and walks. They do a lot of volunteer work. We think it's really important. So many people do so, so much for us and the women that we think it's really important for them to learn how to give back to the community, and they love it. They've learned to love it. So we volunteer at 3-4 different places. So they stay very, very busy. They cook. They go grocery shopping. I mean, many come to us. They've never used a dishwasher. They've never cooked a meal. Their meals come out of a paper bag. They've only eaten McDonald's when they're allowed to eat, if they're, because sometimes withholding food is a way of control. So they're learning how to cook, and we had one woman, she came in, she'd never done a load of wash. The bubbles were coming out of the washing machine because she had filled it, so full. So they learn basic life skills, how to go shopping for what's, priced well, and how to create a meal. So they're very, and then there's lots of fun. We do go to the movies, we go to the park, we do recreation, they hike. I mean, we have very, very busy days.
We're talking Edie Franklin. The capacity today at the house
is
12. And when we come back, we're going to ask her what the residents of Sanctum House these last 8 years has taught her. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Edie Franklin, who in 2014 founded Sanctum House. So these 100-plus women that you've helped transform their life, Edie Franklin, what have they taught you?
I can't talk about that without getting emotional. I always say that it's the most courageous group of women, people, to have been traumatized and lived through the kinds of traumas and horrors, the stories that we hear of what they've had to survive from little children, or if they got into the life when they were 14, 15, 16, some even as adults. The courage that it takes to live through it, first of all, it helps you learn the value of life, that, the human spirit of surviving is unbelievable to me. And then to come out the other side and say, I can't do this alone, I need help. And then to expose yourself and become vulnerable to people to help you become the person that you never even knew that you wanted to become. You didn't even know that you had options. You thought all you had was, whatever this person, whoever your abuser was, whether it was a boyfriend or a parent or a brother or a sister or a cousin or a girlfriend or whoever it was that was abusing you and telling you you had no worth whatsoever. And to then come out and I watched them flourish and say, I'm living my best life. I mean, I'm able to see what I'm worth today, that I'm worth more than just selling my body or giving my body away or being abused. So I've learned courage, and I've learned how, when you have nobody that you've ever trusted, and then all of a sudden you say, okay, I'm going to trust you, because we show up the same way every day. We show up for them. They know what they can expect from us. We are no surprise. So I learned the ability to trust and to be courageous.
All right. And you've got a project right now. You're trying to have a second house,
yes,
to increase the capacity by 16 more.
Yes.
If you want to learn more, www.sanctumhouse.com. SanctumHouse.org. Tell us about...
Well, we have the opportunity right now to expand our, you know, expand our broad width to about 36 other more people. So we have another house that will hold 16 women. Our house is at capacity with 12 right now. And sometimes somebody leaves, so we might have come up with another bed and what have you. But the new house will house 16, and then we also have a transitional house with apartments. So, like, we have our first graduate is graduating next month. She's been with us for 2 years, so we're very excited about that, you know, first success of a full-blown program that she's done. And it's apartment houses, so that they can have apartments and do transitional housing to move on. And it's a gorgeous piece of property and beautiful homes. And they're not like, it's not like institutions. It's not like, you know, hospitals or, you know, wards. It's a beautiful, beautiful house and property.
And you're trying to raise another $2 million.
That's exactly correct, so that we can not only purchase the properties, but also, you know, fix it up and have some operations money, too.
Okay, we're talking to Edie Franklin. Edie, I quote you now. We peddle hope. Edie, what's hope?
Well, you know, I think one of the things when I say, I like to say that's what we do, is we peddle hope. We give our women a process, and we teach them not just hope, because hope means to us that there's an opportunity out there. We say the possibilities are endless. We're your door to freedom and endless possibilities. But we give them also a path. I believe we do not, you know, people say, well, do you save them? And when you rescue them, we really don't. What we do is offer women the tools to take care of themselves. We offer them the tools to save themselves. We don't save people. We say, here are some tools, and if you see something for yourself, you can have the hope that it can actually happen for you.
If there's an abused woman listening tonight that's lacking hope, Edie Franklin, what do you say to her or him?
You know, there are. It's hers and hims, to tell you the truth. And it's young children and older children. You know, there is hope. There is life after trafficking. There is life after abuse and extreme trauma. And we have the ability to help you with that. You can always call us. You know, don't be afraid to call us and tell us. And we're a two-year program. But if you come and you can learn stuff sooner, or if you need longer than 2 years, we are available to help you with whatever your issues are. And if you're not a fit for our program, we can always refer you to someone else. But our program is wonderful.
What are the warning signs, Edie? What warning signs are there that a loved one is in trouble?
So depending on the age of the person that you're talking to, so for a young person, number one, when they start to isolate from the family, you know, or when they develop new friends that you've never seen before, perhaps they now have, you know, all the little bells and whistles. They have a new purse. They have new jewelry. Then you know they can't afford it. Perhaps there's a 16-year-old girl and she develops a boyfriend that's 19 or 20 or 21. You have to think that there's something wrong with that, because why would a 21-year-old boy have any interest in a 15 or a 16-year-old girl? There might be something amok there. And to not be afraid, you know, to parent our children. I think we have to watch the internet. The internet is, you know, years ago, you know, you found people on the street corner, but now they find them on the internet. So if they're hiding in their room and always on the internet, you have to think about that too. Malnutrition, fear, you know, they don't have their own ID anymore. There are a lot of signs that somebody is being abused, bruises that you can't see.
If there's a dad tonight who's abandoned his daughter or son listening, what do you say to that man?
You know, there's so many schools of thought on whether you do tough love or you do embracing people. I know for myself, if my family had not embraced me and supported me, I would be dead. I really would. I wouldn't have had a chance. So if you've abandoned your child, I would be open to listening to whatever. Just listen. Be available. You need to make yourself available to your child so that they don't feel, you know, scared to talk to you. So I would say engage in their life.
If there's a listener that says, I have empathy, but Edie, why should I care?
Why should you care? I mean, good Lord. Why? How can you not care? I mean, these are civil rights. These are, when you know, you look at people, I think one of the things that is so important is that we change our language about trafficking victims and trafficking survivors, and they're not, children can't be prostitutes. Children are prostituted. When we say they're abused and they, you know, call it like it is, people are being raped, people are being tortured, people are being abused. We have to care about people because look at all the people that they come out of a terrible, here, I've got women right now coming out of terrible situations that are now learning how to use a computer, getting jobs, and giving back to communities and giving back to society. Every life is worth saving. Every person, it's not you and them. It's not us and them. It is we. We are the people that are being abused. So you have to care. It could be your daughter, your sister, your brother, your wife. It can happen to anyone.
The International Labor Organization estimates that there are 4.8 million people trapped in forced sexual exploitation globally. Mm. 4.8 million. If you want to learn more, www.sanctumhouse.org. And I'm Jack Rasool, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Jack Rasool, host of WJR's Anything is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week because with God, anything is possible. Spohom. I'm Jack Rasool. This is Anything is Possible. We're talking to Edie Franklin. And since 2000, she's been a real estate agent, and a very good one, with Max Brook Realtors. Edie, tell us about Max Brook Realtors.
Well, I have to tell you, I think Max Brook Realtors in downtown Birmingham is the only game in town, okay? It's a phenomenal organization, and I love working there. It's owned by the Elsie family from Real Estate One. And I started working there in December of 1999, actually. And I've been there ever since. And they're it's a wonderful organization, and I love selling real. When I was a girl, I remember I used to go through Sherwood Forest and Palmer Woods and my girlfriends, and we would drive on the streets and knock on doors and say, is Susie home? So that we could peek in the houses and see what all those big houses looked like on the outside. So I think I've liked houses for a very, very long time. We used to redecorate our house every Sunday. My aunts would come over and my grandparents would come over, and we would be moving furniture and moving stuff. So I had an affection for houses at a young age.
Edie, why are women so successful as real estate agents?
Well, partially because buying a house is really an emotional exchange, and it's kind of like the kitchen is the heart of the home. I think women put their heart into wanting to make it right. You know, you want to it's like waitresses, I think, have a really hard job because your mother fed you as a child. And if you're not a good waitress and don't bring it like your mother did, you get tortured by the client. But I think women are just sensitive to it and emotional about houses and identify with the woman, even though they might deal with the man. The man will say, oh, you know, if she's happy, I'm happy. And as women, we want to please people. And when we're selling them a house that is so personal, we take ownership of that.
At least a smart man will say.
right, exactly.
Happy wife, happy life.
Okay. That's right.
What do the best real estate agents have in common?
You know, everybody says, well, I like people, but I don't know that it's so much that you like people as that you have listening skills. I think you need to be able to listen and filter out what people say they want to what they really want, because they don't even know it. So if you really watch what you're doing with them as you walk through a house, I always say the first day out is a fact-finding mission. Let's just walk through, and if you're very verbal and tell me what you like and what you don't like, I will be able to understand you because I can kind of put it together and then figure out what it is that you really like.
There was a song many years ago, A House Is Not a Home. Mm-hmm. Burt Bacharach, I think.
Mm-hmm.
What makes a house a home?
Oh, gosh. When we go into a house, just... It's the emotions of the people that are living there, the you know, the decorations, the coziness of it, the feeling of it. There's, you walk into a house, I always, when I walk in with my clients, I say to them, you know, this isn't the right house, or they'll say, I don't like it. I always say, because now we know what you're looking for, when we walk in, we will know it, and we'll all look at each other and say, this is it. There's an energy that a house gives out, and if you know your people, you will know that energy. And that's what makes a house a home, is the energy that the house gives off when the people commingle their energy with the house.
What does a home mean to a woman?
Safety, warmth, comfort, love. You know, I go home and I go, oh, I really love my house. It just feels good.
Edie, do you know the questions that I'm asking ahead of time? Perfect answers. What suggestions do you make to someone who wants to sell a home today?
I tell my solicitors, I always tell them, you have to put on buyer's eyes. You have to go out to the street, look at the house and walk in and say, okay, I'm now going to buy this house. What's good with it? What's wrong with it? You know, does this need to be changed? Does that need to be changed? You need to look at your house as... it's not your home anymore. You have to change it from a home to a house. That's the difference. You have to make it a house now, because now it's a product. It's something that you're selling. You have to disengage from the home aspect and make it a house if you want to sell it.
We're talking Edie Franklin, who since 2000 has been a real estate agent with Max Brook Realtors, www.maxbrook.com. We hear this word Zillow.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to revolutionize? Has it revolutionized the industry?
No, it's changed it. I mean, all the internet sites have changed it. But sometimes they're right and sometimes they're wrong. But I don't really believe that any automated system is ever going to eradicate. You know, there was a time when realtors thought, oh, my God, they're going to take over. And there's not going to be a need for a realtor. There will always be a need for a realtor, because a personal touch, a home is so personal that I think you really need a personal touch to go along with it. And those places make it easier because people can go search on their own first. And then what do? They pick up the phone and they call their realtor and say, I'd like to see this house. So they still want that hands-on assistance when they're purchasing.
Paint for us a picture of the residential brokerage business in 10 years.
Oh, dear. The residential broker business in the next 10 years. Well, it's going to definitely be different. I think there will be more internet stuff, you know, sites and more, you know, 3D walkthroughs and animated product. But I still think we're still going to be a major, major part of it. It's just going to be more technology. I mean, it's like figuring out what the phone was going to look like 10 years, you know, 20, 30 years from now. Who knew we were going to carry a computer in our pocket?
So for the last 32 years, you've been clean.
Yes.
You've made a huge difference in many people's lives through Sanctum House. And you've also been a very successful residential real estate agent for 20 years. And I asked you, how do you do it all? And your answer was, Jack, I don't really know how I did this. Why so?
I had an idea in my head what I wanted to do. And I just continued to do the next right thing without any attachment. I mean, I had a big picture goal of what I wanted it to be, but I had, when I tell you, zero idea of how I was going to do it. And I still don't. I need to raise this $2 million, okay, to expand. And I actually want to raise $3 million for operations for another year to get, you know, more endowment money so I don't have to think about it. I don't know how I'm going to do it. I just know every day I get up and I do what I believe to be the next right thing. And I just do it. And somehow, be it God, be it the universe, be it whatever, it somehow is falling into place. So I don't really know how it's happening other than external forces are just putting me in the right place at the right time, thank God.
If there's a listener that says, Edie, I want to make a change. You know, it's a new decade. I want to change. I don't know how to change. And I can't seem to change. What do you say to that man or woman?
I do an enormous amount of self-talk and personal affirmations and personal self-help, and I read all of the things that I think feels and sounds cult-like, okay? But ultimately, all you have to do is put one foot in front of the other towards a goal and take an action step. If you take an action, you have to change. You have to realize that where you are right now is nothing. Walk into your future. Every step that you take today is the future you. So picture the future you, and how do you become that future you? What do I have to do today to be the person that's an associate broker? What do I have to do today to be the person that found Sanctum House? What do I have to do to stay in my integrity? What do I have to do today if I want to be a leader? How does a leader look? What do they do? What does a person of integrity look like? And just take those actions.
As our time winds down tonight, what advice do you give to our young listeners?
Oh, gosh, just know that the possibilities are absolutely endless for your life. Whatever you think of, you can really do it. I mean, you really, really can. I mean, short of, you know, I don't know that I could be a brain surgeon, but I'm talking about, but you maybe can, because that's maybe where your interest lies, to not be afraid. I was always a risk taker. I always believed that the fruit was fresher on the and sweeter on out on the limb. You might not have to go through the changes that I had to go through, but if you're willing to take a risk and step out there, gosh, the possibilities really are endless.
Edie Franklin, you're a shining example of someone who lives that the best days are ahead. Keep up the great, great work.
Thanks so much, Jack.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahn.
Believe in yourself.